Welcome to the Hardwater Fishing Show with your host, Jeff Byboth and Jason Kilby. We talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're live for the Hardwater Show, Season 2, Episode 5. Can you believe it? We're making tracks this season. It's the fourth week of December in 2018. I think we could almost call this our Christmas edition because I'm sitting here in my basement staring at our Christmas tree. So that's a good thing. I don't know if I got any presents or not. I'm hoping.
Lump of coal, Jason.
No, I hope this is not a performance-based plan. It's more of just goodwill because if it's performance-based, I'm in trouble.
I am also in trouble after last week where I managed to screw up the audio. So hopefully we're not being judged on that.
Hopefully not. Just a reminder, you can find us anywhere podcasts are. I heard today that Google Home works really nice for podcasting us. My brother-in-law actually listens to our show. I think he gets a kick out of it. And he was listening to it on the way home and on his iPhone. And then when he got home, he said, you know, talk to his Google Home to resume the podcast. And he just said 13 minutes. And so then it fast-forwarded right to where he had left off in the car. So it's kind of cool.
Wow, that's pretty cool. The technology has come so long. I mean, we got Google and Apple playing together.
I know, it's crazy. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, and we've been trying to get a little bit more content on that. And just a reminder, if you guys got stuff, pictures you want to have shown of your fish, because I don't have any. And it looks like Jeff may have a fish picture for us, so that's pretty awesome. So feel free to send those in, and we'll give you a shout-out on our show. So that'd be pretty awesome.
Yes, and I do have fish pictures.
You do. I'm a little jealous about that, but we'll get into that. Our structure is just a little bit different this time for the show. We're going to talk about some of our gear and some of our legends, kind of all wrapped up into one. Although I did see Jeff has a story for us later.
Oh yeah.
So
Hackenstein.
Oh my God. I just broke into sweat. Just sweats thinking about it. So Jeff, I hope a lot of people saw, if you haven't been on our Facebook, we had a nice little video that we stole from somewhere else on Facebook, Oofta or something. It's some sort of comedic thing. And it kind of nailed Jeff, except for the man bun. You don't really have the man bun. Thankfully.
No, it was kind of scary, Jay, because you sent me the video or you posted that video, and then I watched it and I realized that the guy in the video, I had the same shirt.
It probably came from Target.
It's the exact same shirt.
You both probably wandered into Target. Kohl's. We're looking for ranch and a shirt. Came out with it.
It was Kohl's.
Kohl's.
It was Kohl's. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yes.
So what do you have? Do you have did you go lowbrow tonight, like some Coors Light or Milwaukee's Best?
No, I'm posting this on Instagram as we speak. So the picture's kind of dark, but so I am drinking Founders All Day IPA Session Ale. And part of this is a shout out. Last year we had my neighbor on, and we talked about beer a little bit during drinking or during his time. And he's talked about this session ale, and there's something about a sessionable beer. So Steve can, you know, listen to the podcast, can enjoy hearing about, we're talking about the sessionable ale. So Founders All Day IPA has a picture of a, old looking like woody Jeep like Matt used to have with a canoe on the
nice.
Top.
Would you just crack that thing?
No.
Here we go. I want to get to mine. I'm thirsty. Nice.
There you go.
So, Jeff, can you guess what I'm drinking tonight?
Well, I'm hoping at some point that it is not the same thing you've been drinking, the old style.
Well, so I did pick up some more old style because I had company, but I...
Is that really what you buy for company?
Yeah.
I understand that you drink it yourself, but for company...
You're just still informed on old style. Like, it won like a national beer competition in 2014. Did you know that?
A national it beer did. Competition? I did yeah, not know that.
I know. Who would have thunk it, right? But it did. So anyway, in spite of that, no, tonight I am drinking a beer I've never had. So this will be a new one. I'll let you guys know if it's any good. It is. And it's actually an IPA. I guess.
Mine is called All Day IPA.
This is called Two-Hearted Ale from Bell's and.
Oh, I know Two-Hearted Ale. That's awesome.
It's got a fish picture on it, so I thought it was appropriate. So we'll see how it tastes. I hope it doesn't taste like fish slime.
It didn't. Oh, no. No, I've had Two-Hearted.
Did you even hear that thing open? It wasn't very aggressive at all.
Is it a bottle? Yeah, it is a bottle. Bottles don't sound as good as
cans. We're going to see how this tastes. If it doesn't, if it tastes like foot, I'm going to go get a old style.
I think it's your taste buds. It's not the beer's problem.
It does kind of. I don't want to run them down, but yeah, it's not old style.
Ugh. So yeah. Jason, you know how sometimes it's the beer and sometimes it's the person drinking the beer. I'm going to blame the person drinking the beer.
Are we turning into a beer show or is it a fishing show?
It's a fishing show. Are you saying we need to move on?
I'm just saying that I might send one of my kids down with an old style here in a minute, but go on. So our topic, Jeff, we kind of talked about our topic. Did we? No, I don't know if we did. You go ahead and give them the topic. It's an exciting topic.
It is. It goes back to the roots of ice fishing, at least from my opinion, the roots of ice fishing. We're talking about gadget, gizmos, contraptions, and homemade ice fishing gear. So to me, it's where ice fishing came from. You know, today is very commercial and I use lots of those commercial available things, but our topic really is about the kind of the roots of ice fishing.
We're talking about the best things money can't buy or can buy. I guess gizmos and gadgets maybe, but we'll get into that. We'll get into that, the definitions of that perhaps later.
Kind of goes with our like our Christmas theme, right? You know,
oh yeah. Gifts are the best. I already ones. Got one present. I got a new fishing pole. I'm pretty excited to use. Yeah, nice. And the St. Croix rod. So,
oh wow, fancy!
I know. I'm hoping it's fancy.
Can you use can you drink an old style and use a St. Croix rod at the same time? It's kind of like, or do they repel each other?
Well, they're both made in America, man.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's one thing. Sure. I mean, I know there's a lot of rods made in the U.S., but I do like St. Croix because they are.
Very cool. Are those made in Minnesota, actually?
Maybe. I don't know that.
I mean, I don't want to get into our show bias again. I mean, because that's a problem we've identified, but I believe they might be made in St. Croix.
It wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I got it sitting over here. Let me look. Let's see if it says. I don't know if it says where. It just says made in North America. Park Falls, Wisconsin. At least that's where St. Croix is out of. I don't know where the rod's made, but we'll figure it out. So ice report? You got an ice report for me up north?
I think we're getting some thicker ice now, even though it's been kind of chilly or not very chilly the last week. I was out today on Minnetonka, and there's about 15 inches. Here, Lake of the Woods has a solid foot. I know I've read out on Red Lake that they have they're letting pickup trucks and wheelhouses, everything under 1 ton out on the lake. So we're thickening up.
That's awesome. In Iowa, by me, I went to the one lake I've been wanting to fish, and there's only thing there is rock chuckers. All sorts of rocks. People throwing rocks, chucking rocks out on the ice, but nobody was fishing. I do know the Clear Lakes got good ice. There's guys out all over. There are some weak spots, but for the most part, there's people everywhere up there. So northern Iowa has ice yet. Central Iowa, there really is not much for fishable ice. Some of the farm ponds and stuff still have some fishable ice, but just be real careful out there. Once again, I mean, wouldn't think we'd be keep giving that speech so close to Christmas, but we are, and we just want everybody, we don't want anybody to go through the ice. So always do your homework and make sure you're checking it all out.
Yeah, I saw there was one resort on Red Lake. They had such a big ice heave that they had to get this gigantic ice bridge. They said it was one of the biggest ice bridges they've ever seen to get over this ridge. So that was kind of interesting. They had pictures of it on their site. So
yeah, those guys have some serious engineering about how to figure all that stuff out. It's pretty cool. Those guys work like dogs in the winter.
So that's what I know about the ice report. From a fishing report perspective, are we doing that later, Jay, or is this fishing report?
Let's get it all done. Yeah, let's do that.
Today I got out. We were on Lake Minnetonka, and like I said, the ice was about 15 inches or so deep. Clear, good ice. I was fishing for sunnies or whatever would bite, as I usually do, and sunnies were biting. So I don't know, I probably caught 20, 25 of them. I didn't just catch and release. I didn't keep any. But there was some smaller ones, and there were some nice sized ones, you know, some that I would take home if I was keeping fish. They're fun. We were catching them in about 20 feet of water. Sometimes I would find them in 16, and sometimes I'd find them in 20, maybe 22 feet of water. And I was working just kind of that transition from deep water into shallow water. And they seemed to be kind of all over in that depth. And again, I was fishing with like a small 16-ounce tungsten jig with just a waxy. I also tried some other like more spoons with minnows, and nothing was really interested in that. So yeah, I don't know. I probably caught 20, 25 of them. Some of them were pretty tiny and some of them were pretty fun.
So how'd you go about picking where, like when you walked out in the lake, like what drew you to that particular location? And don't give the location away, but just how did you decide, hey, I want to fish here today and I think they might be here?
First, we're still in that time of year when you kind of have to go where you can find some decent ice, right? And also fishing Lake Minnetonka, you have to find a place that has parking.
Sure.
For your car, and then somewhere where you can walk out, for me, because I'm not bringing anything bigger than, I don't have a four-wheeler snowmobile, and so I'm walking in somewhere where like I can walk to and looks like it has a good structure. So that was the first thing, just finding the kind of launching point, right? And then once I found my launching point, we talked about this last week where Navionics helps with this. Before I go to the lake, I kind of look on Navionics and get an idea of where I would want to fish. And I always look for structure, you know, looking for where it transitions from deep to shallow is probably the biggest thing I do. I know people talk about like the what's underneath it and transitions from like rock to sand or mud, but typically when I go to a new spot, I don't know that exactly. I mean, you can see depths, but they don't usually tell you on lake maps and stuff that it's mud or rock generally.
Yeah. Otherwise it just says mud, like over 2/3 of the lake. It doesn't really tell. Great. Right. There's mud in here. It's not overly helpful.
Totally. And this is something I've learned from Ron, or just maybe from fishing or from you or who knows, but you know, we look for those choke points too, in those spots where it's just the lake looks interesting. Like if you have a point that comes out, or if you have like kind of a choke point, like in this case, I was in a bay, and at the end of the bay, you know, it gets skinnier there. And that's just somewhere you can target if the structure looks right. But I usually work like from the deep to the shallow, and I just start drilling holes from deep to shallow and then just start fishing each one of those holes until I start catching fish.
So did you use your new auger today?
Oh yeah, I did.
How do you like that?
I fear that gas augers have no future.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes the way I fish, Jay. Like with a gas auger, because they're such a pain to start. And I haven't used the propane one as much as you have a propane one, but you start it and then you drill a bunch of holes because you know, it's a pain to get started and whatever. And then you go fish them. Well, I noticed with my electric one, I just drill a hole and then I fish it because there's no startup. There's no anything. You just drill your hole, fish it. This one didn't work out.
You know, the propane one is nice from that is there's no warm up period,
but you still have to start it.
You just pull the handle and it. I mean, you got to pull a trigger or something, don't you?
I push a button.
Okay, well, we'll see. Time will tell. Time will tell. Here's the deal. You bought the Strike Master this year. I bought my Eskimo last year, and I only probably used it twice. So we'll see 10 years from now on our 896th episode. I'll set a Google Calendar update. I did this for my dryer. It says supposed to last 25 years. I bought this dryer and wash, or this washing machine is supposed to last 25 years. And so I set a Google Calendar to buy a new washing machine in 25 years. So we'll see if I get there. So I'll do the same for this. I will set a Google Calendar reminder to ask you in December of 2028 if you still have your Strike Master thing and if I still have my Eskimo auger.
Sounds
good.
What
do you think?
I think that sounds like a plan.
The downside is I won't be able to buy an electric auger for another 10 years. So I don't know.
I know.
I might lose on this deal.
I'm getting worried about selling my old one because there's a glut of them out there now because everybody's buying electric ones. I know.
Yeah. And if you're like buying a new one, you know, I can see where, like, I think if you've got a good run on gas, I think you're probably a little slower to switch. But if you're buying a new one, yeah, I can see where, you know, unless you know you're doing a ton of fishing in 2 feet of ice all the time. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how they go.
Yeah, it works great. I mean, like when I was out there today, so the battery has like four dots on it that tell you how much charge is in it. And so I fished for like 6 hours today and it went from four dots to three dots.
And how many holes do you think you drilled?
I don't know. I guess like maybe 40. I don't know. I didn't count.
See, that's what we're going to do for our fish on hard water fish this year or trip is you get to drill all the holes.
Yeah. And I mean, there was probably, like I said, 15 inches of ice. But
yeah. So. Cool. Well, very cool. So you caught some sunfish, used a tungsten jig and Yeah. So that's great. I went and looked at a lake that had rocks chucked on it.
Hmm.
But I couldn't even walk out because it was all... melted along the shoreline.
Oh, you had like the shoreline was water, but then there was ice beyond it?
Yeah, I would have had to take a running jump to glare ice. I just didn't think that seemed like a good idea.
I think it would have been good for the show because you could have had somebody else photo it, video it, and then we could have posted that and you could have done it.
I don't think I would have stuck the landing. It would have been really ugly. So I didn't do it.
How about the hard water Olympics? Like open water jumping.
Yeah, like remember when we used to when we were young and dumb and we used to like tackle and beat the hell out of each other to get to a tip up? And now we just kinda don't do that because we don't want to involve an orthopedic specialist in our trips.
Absolutely.
But I think when we get to hover rounds and electric wheelchairs, we'll probably be crashing into each other on the way to get a tip up because that won't hurt.
Well, the way gear's going, everybody will have something like that for ice fishing anyway. So
we'll probably just have a drone that'll fly out there and grab our fish and bring it back. I don't need to get out of my chair. Oh, look, that's a nice one. Okay, go put it back. Thanks, drone.
Thanks, drone. Could you bring me a beer while you're up?
Oh, good grief.
So, Jason, you're going to talk about our other trout fishing report.
So, we have a fellow, Ian, out in Utah, and he sent us a nice Facebook post with some cool pictures. We put some of them on Instagram, and I'll probably drop a couple other of them on Instagram. He fishes for stock trout. They're called Yellowstone Cutthroat Rainbows. And they're out on the Sunshine Reservoir in northwest Wyoming. So really cool pictures. He talked a little bit about, gave us a really nice fishing report. And I guess what I wanted to talk about out of his fishing report is kind of what he was using to catch these stock trout. So they were using like a white twister plastic on lead jig heads with sucker cut bait. And he was using like a mealworm, half a mealworm. And sounded like they had a heck of a good time. And they were using also like a vertical spoon. And they said horizontal is pretty productive on his lake, like a Swedish gold, Swedish pimple. I own Swedish pimples. Have you ever caught a fish on one of those?
I have not, Jay. I have them. I buy them because they're supposed to be the cat's meow, but I've never actually caught a fish on them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was catching fish on those, tipped with a shrimp or a mealworm.
You know what might be the problem, Jay? I'm not Swedish.
No, you're not. Not 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 at all. And yeah, he was also using these little rat finky. I've heard of those before, tipped with a nightcrawler. So sounds like they had a heck of a great time. And these guys are kind of crazy. They just sit out on buckets no matter how cold it is. So that's old school. I love it. Absolutely love it.
I did that today. We didn't have any shacks. I was just on a bucket. Now it was not minus 20.
No. Bucket at minus 20 is cold. That's cold.
It was 20 degrees and I was cold.
Well, but that's you.
I mean, on the bucket. Yeah, I know. I'm kind of
well, I mean, I didn't want to say it, but since you brought it up.
I was looking at wheelhouses. There's wheelhouses out there. I was looking at wheelhouses going, why is mine in storage and I'm sitting on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, that is a question. That is a question. But I know the answer, but we won't get into it.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I think it's great you got out. I'm so jealous. You just have no idea how jealous I am about the fact that you were able to go fishing once again. Why I got to look at rock chuckers.
Well, I'm off this week.
The whole week?
Just gotta get in your car. Whole week.
Man, I'm not.
Oh, yeah. That's
how it goes.
All right. All right. So moving on, current events. I'll cover current events.
What are they?
They're boring. Let's talk about fishing.
Let's do that. Moving on. The current event is fishing. Topic. Is it time for the topic?
It is time for the topic.
So the topic is gadgets, gizmos, contraptions, homemade ice fishing gear. So this is the thing that we love the best. I know that anytime you get to talk about equipment for doing something, I think it's kind of the highlight of a lot of people's life along with doing the event, obviously. And ice fishing is no different. And I think it's because it's really kind of such a rugged sport. You know, it's cold out, it's icy. You know, it's winter. And so you're always kind of looking for that creature comfort and that thing to be a little bit more successful at what you're doing. So we're going to do some definitions. So we give some definitions for what a gadget is, what a gizmo is, and what a contraption is. And so Jeff's going to start us off with a definition for gizmos and gadgets. Jeff?
Yeah. So these came about after some refinements. In the early years, we didn't have these breakouts. But then sometimes somebody would bring something they bought and it was interesting, but you know, we're like, well, what do we call that thing? So the first thing we have is a gadget or a gizmo. We kind of use those interchangeably, but this is something you buy. The example I gave is the bucket hoodie that I got. It's kind of a cool thing. It's not, you know, a Strike Master ice auger that is around everywhere and you can go buy. It's kind of something a little outside of the norm, right? So that's what we call a gadget or a gizmo. The other category we have is contraption. Now, contraptions are the roots of hard water fishing, right? These are, I sat in my garage and tinkered and thought and Googled and tinkered some more, and I created this on my own. This is not something you will find in any store. Really, a true fisherman has to have at least one contraption that they can identify with or have created in the past.
Contraptions are, you know, back in my day, prior to Google, you really had to think those up because you couldn't just Google and use somebody else's idea, right? They were born out of your imagination or about what some old guy told you. And you know, and that, so that, not to downplay contraptions of today, because there's some really neat stuff out there on the internet that somebody figured out and then was nice enough to post instructions. But man, back in the day, you really had to use some serious brain power and alcohol to maybe come up with some of this stuff.
And you know, I used to use, you know, these things called books to a lot of my inspiration, because before the internet, right, you had books. I remember I had this like for my boat, and we're going a little off subject, but I remember for my boat, I bought this book called like the 12-volt Bible, right? I mean, you would go buy a book and you'd kind of get some inspiration for some of those things. So
yeah, or you'd see it like an idea in like Field and Stream or Fisherman's Journal or some fishing magazine. Somebody would have wrote an article about how to make something.
But usually the problem statement came from when you were out fishing and you're like, gosh, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah, there's got to be a way to do this thing easier.
And I could do that in my garage.
And cheaper.
So there is a rule that we put behind these contraptions, though. They can't just be ideas.
Yeah, it can't be theoretical. My fish retrieving drone.
Right. That's just an idea. That's never been tried. Well,
that we know about. That if you have about. Tried it and you got video, send it.
So the rule is you have to try, like you have to deploy it. Like it has to leave your garage, enter the ice sled, make it to the shack, and be used in some way.
Yes. All right. So I think we each have some favorite contraptions, right, Jeff?
Absolutely. I have some favorites, and I had to just start bulleting them because I have too many to talk about in our time frame. I know we try to wrap this up in a half an hour, and there's no way we're going to come close to that this time. But
I would suggest that if you're driving, take the long way. If you're sitting at home, send the kids to the or actually have the kids listen. Settle in, make some popcorn, and we're gonna roll through these because they're good ideas.
If you're listening in your car, prepare to sit in the garage listening to our podcast while you're still in the garage because you want to finish it up.
But if the car's running, keep the garage door open, please.
Well, yeah. That sounds like a lot of
safety first.
Safety first.
Please be safe.
You could. Something I think about is I pass this boat launch every day from back and forth to work, and I see people fishing. If you see that, pull in there and watch people fish while you listen to our podcast.
I like that. That's a really good idea. Better yet, you could listen to our podcast while fishing.
That is the ultimate pairing, podcast about ice fishing while ice fishing.
Yeah, that's like watching a cake being made while eating a cake.
Yeah, totally.
That's lovely. Or I'm just hungry for cake.
I feel
cake.
Like we're off subject.
Well, I'm...
We've just taken 10 minutes to tell people that our episode's going to be long, so take longer.
Okay, so I'll go first. So this was actually my very first ice shack, and so these have been around a long time, and a lot of you have probably seen these, and they are the ice fishing shack contraptions. So it's made out of plywood, where you have the two plywood walls. You got the classic blue tarp that is in between them. They're the oval, kind of tall oval shaped doors. And you got a wood floor, and the whole thing collapses into the center, and you can drag it out on the ice and then throw it in the back of the pickup when you're done. These were quite popular back before all the pop-up shelters were around, or the fish traps were around. Because you can build one today for under $100, and you can have a nice warm shack that's reasonably portable and is pretty durable and will hold up in a wind. And we'll post, I had found an online resource that still had it on their website. They're kind of falling out of favor, but it's probably one of the original classic type portable ice shacks that were out there on the internet. And that was actually the very first ice shack I had owned. I had bought it from a guy at an auction for like $10.
Yeah, and I like this part. It talks in here about customizing it to make your own, and I think that's important when you're building your own contraptions.
Absolutely. You can do whatever. You know, you could use a blue tarp, a green tarp, a red tarp, whatever color you want.
Taupe. How about taupe?
Taupe? What the heck? What is taupe? I don't even know what that is. Is that a candy?
It's
I don't even know who you are sometimes. Taupe. Good Lord. Moving on.
Moving on. Taupe. All right. So I'm going to go reach back, and I know this was the 80s. This was early on in my fishing experience. So my neighbor was one of the first people that introduced me to, I forgot to shut my phone off. My neighbor was first introduced me to ice fishing and fishing in general. And we built these sleds, and they were basically boxes, right? They were wooden boxes with 2x4s as the skis. And then you just built a wooden box out of plywood and 2x2s or 2x4s. I don't remember what we used. And then it had a lid, right? So just a wooden, like, crate almost thing. And we painted them. And it had a little bench that went across the front. And so how it would work is you'd just open it up and you'd put all your ice fishing stuff inside of it. And then, the back acted as a kind of a windbreak. And you would just drag it out in the ice and fish with it. And I know we deployed it, so I know this made the contraption list, but I don't know how often I actually deployed it because I think it was kind of heavy because it was all made of wood. So that was one of my first contraptions that I ever did. And this was probably before I really even had an ice auger or anything. Like, we're talking hand auger, and we're talking, you know, era of those. You remember those fishing poles that had just two dowels that you would wrap the line around?
Oh, I still have some of those. I actually use them yet.
Yeah, so that's what we would use. And I'd go to this lake by my house called Tanner's Lake, and, you know, we'd occasionally catch a fish. I mean, I barely remember catching fish. It's amazing to me that I liked ice fishing after not catching very many fish when we were kids. So yeah, that was probably my first contraption I had. I think it was blue. I think we painted it blue, but it worked.
That's pretty cool. I still use some of those old fishing rods that I have, because, like, if you're fishing like in 8 feet of water or less, you know, like where you're just jigging for panfish, because it, especially if you're sitting outside, because there's nothing to freeze up. You know, when you catch a fish, you just stand up and it comes out of the hole because the water's so shallow.
Oh, yeah. Today I was fighting those. My rods are so frozen up. That doesn't happen with $2.
Yeah, so those old school ones, they don't. I mean, actually, they still have their place in my book to be used on cold days where you're sitting outside, because you don't have to worry about a reel. It works good. It's kind of like the old bamboo fishing poles. When we first started hard water, when we used to go on our fishing trip years ago, we would, you know, we're college friends. We didn't see each other very often. And we didn't have cell phones back in those days. So, you know, we'd mail a letter and say, hey, I think we should go fishing. No, we'd call each other on the phone, but we didn't have cell phones. So when we got together, we wanted to talk and fish. So we would take two different ice shacks. Jeff, do you remember this?
Oh, I absolutely remember this.
So Ole had a flip shack, and you had that old, was an old canvas plywood thing, right?
Yeah, it was like the old suitcase style. So it was, I think it was 6x8. So it had a plywood base that had some hole, like four holes, maybe in each one in each corner. And then, you know, the canvas had some poles that you just kind of held up. So suitcase style, but like homemade more. I mean, the bottom was plywood, and you know, I don't know where it was made, but it was pretty old school.
Didn't that thing have like a wood stove when you first bought it?
Oh my gosh, Jay. That's a legend for a, yeah, it had a wood, it what?
that's a different story for a different day.
No, it wasn't a wood stove. It was a propane stove, but it had a stack.
It did. It was,
remember, vented. It had like piping. So you'd go out on the lake in theory with this canvas shack, and it had like a pipe that you were supposed to bring with to put out of the heater to heat outside of the shack.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's so you didn't die.
Yeah, I know, but I'm pretty sure we almost died when we tried to light it, and I don't know that it ever actually worked.
No.
The heater.
I don't think it ever did, but it was good.
I remember some flames. I remember some flames coming out of it.
Yeah. So we'd drape tarps and stuff over and open doors wide open. So we'd have this like tent city thing going on, but it was pretty cool. Would that be a contraption?
I mean, it's a bunch of things you bought, but we put them together. Remember, we had clamps and a tarp, and we'd put it over the two shacks, and then we'd clamp it together. Yeah. We'd use, Coleman lanterns delighted.
Oh, back in the day.
I think it's a contraption.
The Coleman lanterns. Yeah, absolutely. So moving on from that. So we got into one. We had a round of tip-ups, adjustments, where we were trying to build a couple of different types of tip-ups. And one thing, when we were in our shacks, we had, you know, you'd run a flag out, a tip-up outside the shack. And so you'd want to know, hey, do I have a fish, without doing the pop-up game where you keep looking out the window to see if your flag was up, right? So we all built, I don't know if we all did, but I know I did, a tip-up alarm. And so I'm thinking, okay, how do I build this thing? And I'm good in theory, but I don't always like to, I don't refine things maybe to the level Olson does. And so I'm like, I need,
none of us do.
What? I don't have that kind of time in my life, but I'm like, okay, so what I need to do, I'm thinking to myself, how do I make this work? I want, when the flag goes up, I want this thing to make a noise. Okay. So I'm looking around, and on my workbench, I see an old smoke alarm that I had taken out of the house. I'm like, well, that makes noise. And so I took it apart. I took the lid off the thing, and I pulled the circuit board off the plat of the plastic deal. And I'm like, well, how does this work? Well, it there's a test button on here that when you hit that test button, a thing goes off. Well, that's just a switch. So when that becomes the other side of that becomes powered, you hit that switch, it connects the circuit and it makes a noise, right? So that's simple. So I took the circuit board and I soldered a wire to that other side to make that connection. And then I took a bolt, because I had a bolt, and I taped that bolt to the tip up so that when the tip up flag came up, the spring hit the bolt and it completed the circuit and it made the smoke alarm go off. And everybody knows how loud those are. And then because, you know, I did want to refine this a little bit. I took a Tupperware container that my wife's probably still looking for. This was early on. I now know that Tupperware is not stuff you should put holes in. But anyway,
no,
especially if it says Tupperware on it. But I took Tupperware box and I stuck a hole in the top and put my circuit board chunk inside of there and stuck the wire out the top of the top. So now it's reasonably waterproof, right? And then I just put an alligator clip on the wire, so you just hook it up to the tip up. It worked really good, except I did not bring it into Canada with me because I thought, like, a chunk of circuit board in a Tupperware container with a wire sticking out of the top, I don't know if they would believe me when I said, no, it's my tip up alarm. Here, let me show you. I thought the border folks might not see the merit in that chunk of circuit board.
I will tell you that their sense of humor is very low.
It's pretty low. But it worked.
At the border.
It worked slick for years.
Yeah, I remember we used to tow that thing around.
Yeah, and I don't know where it went. I think I finally threw it away. I haven't seen it in years. Yeah. So. But
I feel like you owe us a diagram. Like, you need to draw this up, because obviously we don't have a picture of it, but, like, you know, just like a sketch or something.
I don't sketch well. I'm better off looking in the garage for it. I don't think I've got it anymore. I think I finally chunked it. Because, you know, there again, a lot of the contraptions that we made in those early years are now, I mean, mass produced. You can buy a tip up noise alarm for like $10 or less at any store you go to that sells ice fishing stuff. So it,
I remember I created one with a doorbell and a switch from eBay.
The wireless doorbell ones were the coolest, because what did Sean do that first? The wireless one?
We both did it the same year, I think.
And you didn't even talk about that. You both, I think, came up with it. And you're sitting there and all of a sudden, ding dong, ding dong. Like, what the?
There's a fish.
What the heck is that? Oh, I got a fish.
The best was Ollie's would remember he had an owl? Do you remember?
Yeah.
He'd go, whoo, whoo. Oh, I've got a fish. My
it's a fish.
I said, you remember that though, the who?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like a,
I think he still has that.
We'll see if we can get it on record it.
How about the sock too?
Oh, I think the sock too is actually where we have to have the developer, Oli, come on the show and explain it to us. I feel like we wouldn't do it justice because it's too, don't you think?
I agree.
He still has it, I'm sure.
I agree. We'll get a picture of it. And then I think he's still got it. And then he can talk about the development of the sock too.
Because, I mean, that's way beyond Tupperware and smoke alarms.
Hours, days, light years. That's like me throwing a rock up in the air and calling it a rocket and an actual rocket.
I like it. That visual.
You like that? So, yeah. Okay. So what else you got?
I'm going to move on. This is kind of weird, but this one came up as I was researching the different contraptions and gadgets that we've had through the years and that I've used. So we've talked about this a little bit, but there's four guys, Jason and I and two other guys that we go on annual trip every year, and it's kind of an adventure, and this year is actually our 20th year. So one of the things I really find is that we started keeping a scrapbook, and there's been years where we're worse or better at this, but I was just looking through that and thinking how cool. It's not a contraption, you know, it's per se, but it's something certainly homemade, and we deploy it every year when we bring it, and it's pretty cool to look back on it. And I was just looking at it today, and that's what made me think about it. And I know, you know, Ron does this a little bit too, because he has like a wall in his cabin where they all the big fish they put on here, which is kind of a similar concept. But you know, just having that history and the pictures and that kind of stuff, I think is really cool. And I'm actually thought too, now that I've got this wheelhouse, that I'm going to create one for that, so we can, you know, people that come and visit and are in the shack with me can, you know, cool fish they catch or just their memories from being there. I don't know. And part of this comes from me. I used to work for Creative Memories, which is a scrapbooking company. So that's kind of where the idea came from. But it's pretty cool. I mean, I like to look back at it.
Well, and I would say the first couple of years you did that, we made a lot of fun of you. And now that we're
old, you make fun of me. You make fun of me all the time, not just the first couple of years.
No, that's not true. Well, let's move on. But what I would say that retrospectively now, it's really cool to have, and we do look at it every year when we go back and kind of reminisce about some of the things that we did or didn't do or that happened. And we've used it as an official record sometimes because we're like, no, I remember when this happened. And someone's like, no, that's not. And then we consult the book about when things officially happened. So yeah, that is it's a contraption-ish, I guess.
Now, I will say, Jay, that this certain history and scrapbook is only shared between the four of us. I mean, nobody else ever sees this.
Yeah, it's kind of like
our own thing.
Yeah, it's like the Dead Poets Society book. If you ever watch that movie, it's kind of like that. It's that cool.
Yeah, it is.
Someday when we're all dead, the last guy will get to read it. They'll read it at his funeral.
We do have a reading once a year of the history and a looking of the scrapbook. Yep. That happens once
a
year.
Yep, every year.
And this year will be the 20th reading.
Nice. So let's see. Other gadget or other contraptions. So I did a contraption. And this is kind of a common one you see around the internet is just the homemade ice, the fishing rod holders. And the one I used is, I don't know if it's a contraption. So you haven't seen these yet, Jeff. These are in my ice shack. These are, so I had a set of jumper cables and I burned them up.
I'm wondering where this is going now. Not many rod holders start with.
I'm telling you, I had a pair of jumper cables and they burned up. I burned them up on trying to start my truck. And they were cheap, you know, so the wire burned through. Okay, happens all the time. Anyway, so I cut the wires off.
I've never seen this happen before, but let's move on from that.
So I cut the wires off of them, and they work great as a rod holder. So I just clamp them right to the pipe in my ice shack, and then the rod sits right in the V, and it's a rod holder.
Okay, I need a picture of this.
I'll get you a picture of them. Yeah, it works great. Cool. I'm not sensing in your voice that you see the value in this.
I totally get it, and I love how you like Martha Stewart it and like reuse
it's completely recycling. It's environmentally
maybe
friendly.
It's more MacGyver. Is MacGyver better? MacGyver better than Martha Stewart?
Yeah, I'd rather be MacGyver than Martha, but Martha has a lot of money, so I mean, she's been to prison. She's legit.
Yeah. Did you know that MacGyver's from Minnesota?
No, I didn't know that, but that makes a lot of sense.
There you go. All right, back to our Minnesota bias again. Sorry about that. All right, so one of the other things I wanted to talk about that I think have made a comeback was in 2002, I brought Snapstick glow jigs. And do you know what Northland sells a ton of right now? Snapstick glow jigs.
That is like, really weird. You know, that the spoons? Back again.
They're not new. They're just reinvented.
Everything that's old is new again all the time.
And then I remember your make your own fishing lure kit. Remember that? That wasn't really a hard water thing. That was just something we did while we weren't catching any fish on Mille Lacs.
Yeah, it kept us busy.
We made our own fishing lures.
We did. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. That was kind of a Martha Stewart deal. We had playing with beads and feathers and stuff.
Oh, I just snorted. Oops.
But it worked.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. It was fun. I caught some fish on those lures that we made with beads and feathers.
Yeah, they rolled around in my tackle box. I don't know if I ever used one, but they were cool looking.
Yeah.
One of my favorite gizmos that you had was the Jiggin Buddy. Remember that?
Was that the blue one?
The one that you hung on your bucket and it would just like go up and down automatically.
I still have
and it
that
had
thing.
Like a.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That thing.
That was like
still,
2005.
That still works.
You mean it still goes up and down or it catches fish?
I've never caught a fish on it.
Okay. Just checking.
My favorite tip up though contraption is, and it finally died and I've not been able to find another one. It was at the, looked like a swing set and it had the little wind vane on it.
Oh yeah.
And it just had the best. I caught so many fish on that thing and you could only use it when it was, the spool was not under the water. So you had to use it on the warmer days with a little bit of wind and it had such a good action to it. And it, because the wind would push that little weather vane and it would just ever so slightly kind of just keep wiggling the bait kind of erratically, not rhythmically, which I think is the
yes.
key, in my opinion, is why that other one doesn't work as well, is because it's so rhythmic versus erratic. And like when you're mimicking a wounded bait fish and they're erratic, not rhythmic. I don't know. That's my two cents.
Well, Jay, you remember when they had those buzz sticks, right? Remember those buzz sticks?
Can we talk about that one on this show?
So I thought about this because it's a family show. And I thought about, I didn't know how to describe this. Okay. I wanted to come up with you're really good at this, coming up with a way to describe this without being family friendly.
So what I did is. I mean, I think about this. So the buzz sticks were coming around and they were kind of expensive. And so I.
And those were the commercially available buzz sticks. They were made by Clam, I believe. And you could go and you'd put a battery in it and it would shake the end of your rod and jig it automatically. But it kind of like it was more of a vibration than a big jig.
Yeah, it would just vibrate essentially the lure by proxy through the line, right?
Right.
And so I guess what I would say is I looked around the house and I found a similar item and I taped it to the end of the fishing pole and made my own buzz stick and caught the very first walleye the year we went to Red Lake, like within 3 minutes on that particular fishing pole.
Well, 3 minutes is usually about right length of time.
Yes. Yeah. It as advertised. That's all, as advertised.
Oh, boy.
I
don't think we really communicated that one, but I think as a family show, we can't say anymore.
I wish I don't have it anymore because the picture would tell 1,000 words. But I think people will understand. If you have any questions about the specific construction of that, feel free to just email us and we'll give you more detail if you'd like. But let's just
say. It was a homemade buzz stick.
It was a homemade buzz stick. Homemade buzz stick with. Things commonly found in most households.
Would you find these in dressers, Jay?
Everybody keeps things like this in different places.
Nightstands?
Bathrooms.
Okay. I guess it could be found in many places.
Moving on.
All right.
I'd forgotten all about that.
So another one that we should talk about, and this is actually a really seriously awesome one. Do you remember that year that we did fish spearing, or at least attempted to do fish spearing?
And then only to find out that the lake was not clear after we cut like a 4-foot by 4-foot hole in it with
I think that's a story for another day. I feel like we're giving, but for part of that, we developed, Sean made... or Ole made, a homemade decoy. Remember? He took a copper pipe.
Yeah.
And then had some hair on it somehow. Oh, from a rope. And that was our decoy, and we tried it.
But it
worked
work.
As well as the... It worked as well as the other decoys we had.
That's true. But we couldn't see them once you put them in the water. So maybe it worked. We just... Yes. How would we know?
We just stared into a dark hole.
It didn't work. It didn't work at all.
All right.
Oh my gosh.
There's a legend for another day.
Yeah, we're finding more legends at least.
Oh yeah, they're hidden around every corner. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about specifically, Jay?
There's so many good ones now that I'm thinking about it. How about the stuff we sometimes bring for like small, like gift bag items that we'll bring, like t-shirts or pot.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's another show. I feel like it's a whole other show. Gifts. Okay. Ice fishing gifts. I mean, that's a whole other show.
Ice fishing gifts. You know, the Mr. Heater.
Trophies.
Have you deployed your Mr. Heater cooker thing yet? The one that goes on your Big Buddy for making hot dogs or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know that we've figured that one out yet. I talked to the guys at the ice fishing show about that, and they said it should work, but we didn't have a lot of success.
All right, so I think it's time for our legend. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I think we could talk about gadgets and gizmos all day long, and we've talked about them for quite some time, but I think it's time to move on to the legend.
No, I'm going to let you do the legend, because I can't even talk about this legend without, like, gagging.
This happened, I don't know, early on in our hard water trips. But at one point, we decided that rather than everybody bring their own case of beer, that we would designate one person in the group to buy all the beer for everybody. And I think part of this was that we ran out one year, maybe. I don't remember, Jay, why we decided that.
I think it was how we were splitting. I think it was kind of how we were splitting the finances.
Yeah, it might have been finances. I mean, this was earlier on when we were, you know, not that we're rich now, but we were less rich then, you know. So
we were poor.
I was the beer. We were poor. I mean, I don't know if everybody would have said we were poor, but we were on a budget. How about we were on a budget? I was designated to buy the beer for the group. And so you have four guys for 4 days, and we budgeted two cases a day. I can't remember what we budgeted.
No, four cases.
But 4 cases a day? Yeah, I mean, we were
younger. No, it was a case of and beer so, per guy for the trip.
Oh, 4 cases total for the trip. So I found a way to pinch a few pennies when I was at the local liquor store. And they had this beer that was called Hackenstein, and it was like $9 a case.
It tasted just like the name sounds. <Remember this? laughs>
So I purchased the designated amount of cases for the 4 days, and I think they had two kinds. Remember, they had like Hackenstein and then Hackenstein Ice.
Right? It was... Oh my God. Yeah.
So we go up, and I don't know, this might have been on Red Lake. I can't remember exactly the year, but we go up to go fishing, and we bring in the beer so it doesn't freeze. And it was all the beer we had for the weekend. And I think we didn't drink very much beer that time because it was nearly undrinkable. Right, Jay?
It was pretty bad.
So, yeah. So, that was my legend for this year. For this week. We will go ahead and wrap up the show. Thank you very much for listening. And we will be on a short break, but we will bring you a new episode after the first of the year. Merry Christmas and good luck fishing.
Well, thanks, everybody. I'm glad you had a like the show tonight. And stay safe.